are back with episode 629 of The Critical Myth. I'm John, your host, that tonight we have...
Edmund from Greenville, and yeah, it can be tough getting the band back together sometimes.
Yeah, no kidding, especially when we start killing off members of the band in the process.
Yes, indeed.
Speaking of, Broadstomp's not here. I guess he shouldn't have talked about being a potential, you know, employee of certain agencies in Australian government.
Yeah, well, supposedly they hadn't turned that on yet, but I'm thinking I might beg to differ.
How unfortunate. Yes, we're going to go ahead here and wrap up this week's episodic discussion, maybe have a little bit of open topics. But first, before we do any of that, Edmund, I do believe that there is a... there is a disclaimer you need to give.
Absolutely. As ever, whatever we get into about these episodes, we won't give a fig about whether or not you've seen them or not. So if you haven't, you might be spoiled. It's the middle of the pack, so I don't know how much detail we're going to get into, but it still might be something you hadn't yet heard.
Mm-hmm. And let's see. Let's go ahead and pick up where we left off, and that would be with Homeland, Season 5, Episode 4. Why is this night different? Answers elude Carrie. Laura asks Jonas for help. Saul and Allison run an operation. The promo writers for AMC went to Showtime.
Yes, they did.
I beg to differ that this night was particularly different for Carrie. However, I still think that this episode came in pretty high at a 7.75. Any particular thoughts on this one, Edmund?
Yeah, well, it does help when you get your two most intriguing characters and finally get them in the same room again. That being Carrie and Peter Quinn, of course. I did like that they didn't give even a second's thought to trying to maintain the fiction that Quinn would actually follow through on that kill order. Yes, naturally, he does in fact just kidnap her to let her know that she's got a kill order out on her hands so they can start trying to figure it out. That's certainly a case of them staying true to the characters that they've developed. Seeing the two of them bouncing off of each other was very entertaining. And then the stuff that was happening in the rest of the episode was, as I've now come to expect from Homeland, perfectly serviceable spy stuff. But stuff that it did kind of feel like we'd seen some of it before. I found it particularly odd the German hacker is being taken to the Russian mafia, basically. It was actually giving me strange echoes of Sense8 and all of the German criminal goings on in that series. That's not a comparison Homeland should necessarily be bringing up too often, because it was also revealing that plot line as rather formulaic and not having the fascinating characters that some of the Sense8 storylines did.
Yeah, I'm still following this season, but I have to say that even putting the two most interesting characters in the room together still didn't really do much for me. It's just feeling like while this is a good season, it's just good. It's not even hitting some of the heights of last season right now.
Mm-hmm.
So, we'll see. I'm hoping it picks up a little bit more than it already has. I mean, it's not coming in badly. I don't want to give that impression. I mean, if I look at this show in relation to past seasons, it's still there. It's still in the mix. It's not the infamous season 3, but it's a hair below where last season was at this point, so I guess I shouldn't complain too loudly still. It's just not grabbing me with so much else on the airwaves that
Definitely. I think it's a case of they need to start advancing this mystery and who's actually plotting against Carrie this time, rather than keeping it all so murky. Because as you said, I mean, even getting the two of them in the room together did help, but still, so much what's going on around them at the moment is feeling too much like spy stuff I've seen before, and I think they need to get to the nitty gritty of whatever conflict is driving it against her this time. So we can start dealing with those beats rather than just the spycraft set things up beats.
Yeah, I wonder if they can just have Carrie have another bipolar episode.
That's always there. It's
it is every season.
I think it's in a big box on like the top right of the writers room right whiteboard.
Yeah. If in doubt, go here. Yes.
Break this pill bottle. Yes.
I'm not saying that that's not typical of a bipolar type of situation. I'm just saying, from a narrative point of view.
Yes. Yeah.
That well is awfully deep, guys.
Yeah.
Stop going to it. Moving on then to The Vampire Diaries, Season 7, Episode 3, Age of Innocence. Damon goes on a road trip with Bonnie and Alaric to find something he can use against his mother. Caroline, who is being held hostage by the heretics, learns some shocking information about Valerie's past. Stefan learns a few unexpected details about his own past from Lily. Alaric turns to Bonnie for her help after coming clean about a secret he's been keeping. And I gave this one a 7.5. Also coming in at a 7.5 would be Haven's Season 5, Episode 17, Enter Sandman. Dwight and Charlotte work on a way to free Audrey from the Sandman's stasis before he can trap her in his mind forever. At the same time, Duke tries to help Darkseid Seeker Self Burn to recover his memories of Haven. Yes, indeed. Talk about weaving in some of the older plot threads. This one comes in at a 7.5, like I said. I gave it an 8. Haven is wrapping up very nicely for me. I don't feel like it's necessarily... wowing me right now, but at the same time I think it's very strong narratively, and it's not doing any of the things that say Warehouse 13 did to kind of derail its own end. So that's good.
Very good. Yes.
Yes. Also at 7.5 we have Sleepy Hollow, Season 3, Episode 4, The Sisters Mills. Abby and Jenny work together when Sleepy Hollow's children are preyed upon by a monster. Meanwhile, Pandora outdoes herself with her latest assault on the forces of good. And this one came in, as I said, 7.5. We both gave this a 7.5. Edmund, why did you give this a 7.5?
Because as it's been doing, it's Sleepy Hollow is sort of chugging along, resetting itself. And I'm realizing now that certainly with through these four episodes and with the strong family focus of this one, obviously with the kids being attacked and the sisters having to work together and go back over some of their past. But then also with the way they've introduced Sheriff Corbin's son, family legacies they had certainly introduced earlier on with John Noble's character being revealed as the son and the stuff with Katrina that didn't work as well last season. I do get the sense that they are sort of trying to get it back to having those family issues, but more in terms of the sibling sense, not as much the sort of marital woes that undercut things in the last season. It's more that it's just sort of chugging along, doing a perfectly acceptable job of that, but not particularly wowing me. I mean, it's still entertaining, and Ichabod battling with technology is at this point I'm sure already has its own TV tropes page, moving along decently enough, without really wowing me yet.
Yeah, I think that probably sums up this season of Sleepy Hollow, is that it's chugging along well enough, just not really wowing. And that's probably just due to the fact that there's too much interference. I still think that that's the biggest bugaboo of this entire series right now. But again, like you said, Ichabod and modern technology and TV tropes probably has a page that I would never leave.
Yeah.
And I could watch that show all day long and be very entertained by it. And I really feel like when the show is focusing on that, it's doing its job. Ichabod joining the dating scene in the slowest possible way and the most awkward possible way is a joy to behold.
Yes.
Dealing with bureaucracies and everything else is just... Anytime he goes off on a monologue, I enjoy the show. And I feel like they are trying to make this show work as in its mythology work and retool all this stuff about good versus evil. And it's almost like, guys, I think you're actually missing the forest for the trees here. There's a much better show buried in this.
Yes.
Just go with it. But whatever. I am almost resigned to the fact that this is probably the final season of the show and that I'll just have to enjoy what we've got. And I'm sure that there are nuggets of Ichabodness that I could go back to and rewatch, and I'd be just as happy the second or third time through.
Oh, yes.
I really just wish that they would let this guy have his own show, like a podcast. I would listen to that. Just let him complain about things constantly, and I'd probably listen to it for hours.
Oh, yeah.
But there we are. Unless people weren't entirely sure, I'm a big fan of Ichabod. It's just the show he's in is unfortunately kind of mediocre. But there we are. Also coming in at 7.5 is iZombie, Season 2, Episode 4, Even Cowgirls Get the Black and Blues. Liv eats the brains of a country-singing waitress to investigate a case. Babineau meets a female FBI agent who will be working out of his office. Blaine tries to entice a former business associate to come back to the dark side. Major continues his downward spiral. Peyton messes up Ravi's game. Yes, and 7.5. I'm not going to lie. The country music thing took a little bit off of this one for me. And I'm pretty sure Barnstump felt the same way.
Yeah,
although
well,
he would have been making endless references to Veronica Mars and certain episodes of that show here as well. Sorry, he's not here. Blame the Australian government.
Yes.
And the aforementioned issues. Anyway, Edmund, you give this an 8.
Yeah, I just thought they... I think, again, as with the earlier episodes, I've been really liking the way that they've I think done a much better job this season so far of keeping the ongoing story running while still taking on the obviously the in the case of this show the brain of the week. But that whole procedural element, which I think it does mean the episode sinks or swims depending on how you're dealing with that one. Since I didn't mind the country music aspect so much, certainly the stuff that's been percolating around in the background with Blaine reconstituting his empire, Major going through yes, that really wasn't deliberate.
Yeah. You did that.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah, I did. Going through these life changing events getting placed in this impossible position. Certainly for a character whose name was basically set up to be a object of amusement and derision, they are definitely stepping up and taking his character into some rather intriguing gray areas, and the whole aspect of Max Rager basically operating in the background so far, I think has added a rather intriguing element that they're not making him just a sort of the buffoonish or overreaching characters that some of these corporate types can sometimes be portrayed as, and actually something a little more insidious and scary.
Mm. Yes, indeed. I think you summed it up rather well. Again, maybe not harping nearly enough on the country music.
Mm-hmm.
Did I mention the country music? Okay.
Yes.
Anyway. Talking about things that we can harp on.
Yes, for those who haven't figured this out, John will not be vacationing in Nashville anytime soon.
No. All right. Wrapping up this week's episodic discussion with, as I was saying, talking about elements that can take away from a show.
Mm.
Supernatural Season 11, Episode 3, The Bad Seed. Rowena tries to consolidate her power to protect herself from the Winchesters while Sam and Dean search for a missing baby connected to the darkness. Meanwhile, Castiel struggles to heal, and Crowley tries to find a way to use the darkness for his own personal gain. Love the Crowley stuff here.
Yes. Crowley indoctrinating the darkness was definitely a highlight of this.
That was some fun stuff. And I mean, Castiel, as usual, brings plenty to the table. This came in at an average of 7, which is actually kind of amazing considering the fact that Rowena was so ingrained in the episode.
Mm-hmm.
Bronstom certainly knocked it down a peg. But
yeah, well, I
7.5. So there you go.
Yeah, I've got a funny feeling that I think both of us wound up at a 7.5 because we were amazed at how much we did find to enjoy in the episode, despite Rowena's central element.
Yeah.
But yeah, but certainly between you know, and also the Crowley stuff with the darkness was just a lot of fun, and I think with Castiel it was just finally getting that spell off of him and getting us back to you know, not something closer to classic Castiel anyway. You know, not that I think there will ever be a true classic Castiel given how much they've how much they've put the character through in the last season or two, but it was just nice to see them get back to a somewhat familiar footing with them.
Mm. Yes. Speaking of characters that are awkward with technology and modern anything,
yes.
Castiel always brings something to the table, and I think that getting him back involved with the Winchesters is definitely the right move. Although, yeah, his struggles are significant at the moment. Let's put it that way. More Crowley, more Castiel, less Rowena.
Mm-hmm.
These are my notes to the writers of Supernatural.
Yes.
Why do you think she's good to...
Anyway, yes.
Mega Coven? Really?
I think they were trying to take a jab at American Horror Story, but I'm really not sure.
Quite possibly, and...
Or just the whole Ryan verse in general, who knows?
Yeah. I guess. Oh, God, it's got a name now?
Oh, no, I just gave it one. Help. I take it back.
Oh, where's the shooting, the terror squads when you need them? Anyway. Yes, fine. We're never going to say that word again. And we're hopefully never going to see Rowena. Oh, what am I thinking? Of course we are.
Yes.
Let's see less of her, though. That would be good. All right, that's it for this week's episodic discussion, which means we can move on to our open topics. And yeah, I guess, Edmund, I'm going to go ahead and give you the first stab here. It's been a few weeks since we've had anything like this. So anything that's been going on your end of the woods or your end of the stick? Let's not mix any more cliched metaphors or whatever.
No, let's not. Well, I will say that I'm continuing my slow path through the culture novels. After having been jumping between Mr. Stevenson and Mr. Banks, I'm now back firmly with Mr. Banks. It's actually because I was also realizing as I was coming down off Cryptonomicon that and what should I move to next, that one thing that is interesting with Stevenson, and I've now read enough of his books to feel like it is a trend, that he's wonderful at creating these broad sweeping narratives and complex characters and situations and corporate shell companies or whatever's going on, and you get all caught up in this world, and then it feels like he reaches that point where he realizes, like, oh yes, I've got to end this. And so you wind up coming to the end of these books, and it's just sort of stuff happens and it ends, but it isn't necessarily the sort of perhaps the glorious cataclysmic revelation that you might have been hoping for leading up to it. And with the Banks novels, as I've mentioned, it's very interesting the way he just keeps the focus absolutely down on these smaller characters, but while still giving you glimpses of that broader culture around them, which isn't even just the culture, of course, sort of coming back to more restrained world building with Ian Banks is fun. And on the TV front, even though there haven't plenty of stuff that we keep up with here, but I've also been able to continue my journey through Danish drama. After all three series of The Killing, and then getting through all three series of Borgen, I could have gone back to The Bridge, but I decided I'm going to hold off on that, at least until memories of the American adaptation, which I enjoyed so much, fade, and moved on to actually that same production company. I won't even try to pronounce it in the Danish, but basically it's Denmark Radio, DR, that have been making all of these series. They moved on to a series called The Legacy, which I'm now about 4 episodes into. Very different from the other stuff they've done, where certainly crime dramas and political dramas, and then this is very much a character study, where it's the ramifications when a famous Danish artist dies unexpectedly, leaving three, at the time of her death, three known siblings, and then an illegitimate daughter who actually lives in the village where the great artist lives. And so a situation that on its face could seem somewhat cliched in terms of famous wealthy artist dies unexpectedly, and then the family is thrown into disarray, and of course starts discovering things, and various tensions spring up. But as with these other Danish productions, just the writing is incredibly strong, the performances are incredibly strong, and so it's one of as with all great TV drama, even if on the page it doesn't look like something like something you'd be interested in, when you start watching something that's put together well and tells interesting stories about characters who you want to know more about, it's easy enough to get dragged in. As it turns out, if I do want to maybe shift in a different direction, they also have another production that has been spooling out recently called 1864, which is actually a historical military drama. So if I feel like things are getting a little too touchy-feely or soap opera-ish, I can always shift over to that one and watch things go boom.
Mm. Big bada boom. Boom today, boom tomorrow, today. And yes. So forth. Yeah, I mean, certainly, I've heard good things about all of those topics. I really want to get into the culture novels again. I read the first one, of course, but quite frankly, my reading stack has gotten huge.
Yes.
With other things kind of distracting in the meantime. But yeah, it's that's a series that I really want to get back to. I mean, what's on my list right now? I've got the new Jim Butcher book, as he started a steampunk series. And there's a book that came out a couple weeks ago I think it was a couple weeks ago. It could have been like a month ago the way the time has been going. But yeah, I still haven't been able to crack that one open. I guess there is another book in the Cormoran Strike novel series that J.K. Rowling is writing under the Robert Galbraith pseudonym. And I really enjoyed the first two books in that series, and I'm looking forward to that third one and getting into that eventually. And just, yeah, there's a few things out there that I really need to sink my teeth into, and I just haven't really had the time, unfortunately, between stuff going on at Comic-Con and then everything afterwards. It probably was fairly obvious last week that I'm still getting over the damn con crud. This cough has lasted for 3 weeks now, is it? Almost?
I believe so, yes. No, yeah. Them con viruses are nasty buggers.
They are. Now, well, what I understand is that, of course, it's been going around all over the place, but still, that doesn't help. So, yes, it's kind of been disruptive on a number of levels, and certainly it's just been... October has not been the best of months. But that being said, there was one film that I was able to go out and see... Well, really, there were two. I mean, the first one, I mentioned already, the first part of Attack on Titan, the live-action adaptation.
Yes.
And now I've seen the second part. And it's equally special. It's just so fun. I will once again state, this is not a good movie.
Yes.
If you're looking at this from a purely production-wise, you know, like high-quality, you know, massive amounts of layers and everything else. No. This is absolutely just, we're going to have fun and even make fun of ourselves and maybe even make fun of Attack on Titan in general. And if you're not in on the joke, you're going to hate this. But if you can just take a step back and enjoy the absurdity of it, it's going to be a good time. I will admit, once again, we were the ones laughing at all the parts we shouldn't have been.
Of course.
Including the one I'll mention in a moment. But there was a lot of good, just, this one had... Literally, to my surprise, there was a shot towards the end. I won't spoil what it is, but there's a shot, and it was actually a really amazing cinematic shot. almost as if it were a frame right out of a out of the manga or something like that. Just really well done. The CGI, the lighting, everything really mixed well. And I was kind of surprised because I was like, wow, if the rest of the movie had been like that, I can't imagine what we would have gotten.
Mm-hmm.
But definitely you got the feeling like these guys had their tongue firmly planted in their cheeks. And I'm hoping that a lot of people took it that way. It certainly felt like there were people that were a little confused at the tone at the screening that we went to. But like I said, we had a great time. Sasha is great. Hanji is great. Oh, gee, she's great. She was great in the first film. The second film, she is just so on point with the anime character that it's ridiculous. The maniacal laugh, her fixation on weapons and experimentation, it's perfect. But what really makes this film, other than some really interesting plot twists which make you kind of cringe when you think about the implications, is the sheer amount of shipping that's being done in this film. They give everybody a little something. Everyone gets something. Ever thought maybe Mikasa and Sasha? You get a moment.
Hmm.
Sasha and Armin? Get a moment. But what had to be the funniest, and oh, it just kept going, was the scene... Or was the scenes, I should say, between Eren and the kind of stand-in for Levi, Shikishima. And, oh, just... There are so many fanfics that start exactly the way these scenes were playing out. And, yeah, we just were laughing the entire time. I mean, just the way that Shikishima was walking in the scene was like he was kind of trying to, like, seduce with the way he was walking. And he had, there's this thing with apples with this guy, I'm just saying.
Mm-hmm.
There's a thing with apples, and it was like they doubled down on it in this thing, and we wound up walking out saying that if the first movie had a scene that we called the marking of the territory, this movie had a scene that we called apple seduction. Because that's exactly what it seemed like. Down to the fact that he was using an Apple TV to show Eren like a video from the past. Every single thing about this guy has to do with apples. Especially when he's trying to like have his way with whoever. And it's even he had this bottle of champagne and just the way he was holding it. And it was just like, please tell us it's apple cider. Please. Just... complete the picture. And by the time that he was just inexplicably stroking Eren's cheek and then his collarbone under his shirt, and I'm just going, are we watching what I think we're watching? And we're just laughing hysterically. And it just became this great example of this. I totally feel like what this was that this, it was the creators of this film knowing that there is a certain amount of the fan base that it would love to see just unabashed slash between Eren and Levi, and they decided to give it to the people watching the movie. Here you go. Here's a like nothing happens except it is the most, if it were a male and female character and it were like a stock type of film, like a rom-com, you'd see this play out. Literally, the funny part is that they're like in a bunker. And out of nowhere, two beach chairs appear. There's sand on the ground. And he's barefoot. Talking to Eren about this stuff, holding this champagne bottle in the most awkwardly, like, hello, Eren, kind of way. We're sitting there going, what the hell is going on in this movie? Honestly.
Oh, that's amazing.
It is. It was amazing. That's the only way I could put it. And we're sitting there laughing, and all these people are looking at us and say, do you not understand how amazing this is? Like, as fans of the fandom, just the fact that you go from, like, oh, it's this super serious anime and blah, 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 and then it's like there's nothing for, what, a year and a half now. And so the fandom has just taken this into directions that, you, like, forget it. It's now, you can never put this genie back in the bottle. And the fact that the live-action film actually seems to, like, acknowledge that part of the fan base and the ridiculousness of it is brilliant. And I don't care how bad the movie is. It was great. Just that part alone was just like, I can't believe they pulled that off. And then the fact that they then imply what the real relationship is between the two of them, it makes it even more screwed up and a lot more fun. And again, I'm wondering if the 10 and 11 year old sitting across the aisle knew what they were watching or what.
Sounds quite possibly not. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. They I don't think they got it. I will say this time around, there were more people who did show up in Survey Corps gear, so good for them.
Okay, good. Yes.
Quite possibly there were more of us in the audience wearing gear than had survived at the end of the movie. But
yeah, well.
Tackle Titan, what do you want?
Yes.
The plot's ridiculous. I mean, it's definitely a not the adaptation that we want, but it may be the adaptation we needed because the fandom is just so out of control. It definitely was a lot of fun. We felt like, oddly enough, we came out of the second movie and we kind of, like my daughter and I looked at each other and we were kind of like, that actually wasn't half bad compared to the first, the first movie. Maybe we're biased because we thought it was hilarious, but there were some pretty good points in there. And there's a Titan versus Titan battle, of course, in the middle of this.
Mm-hmm.
And, anybody can see that that's going to happen. And it was like, that was actually pretty good for the budget that they didn't have, obviously. But yeah, this was this is not the kind of movie that you go to expecting it to be the spectacle of excellence that you want out of a live action Attack on Titan movie. There is definitely a possibility out there for somebody to, in the years to come, really do it right. And I think that if ever a movie, and I think I said this after the first one, if there's ever a movie that, live-action anime movie that needed to happen where a Western director and studio got their hands on it and was able to make it work, this is the one. This is the one that you want them to do. And I don't know that they ever will because these two films exist, but if they can have multiple types of Godzilla movies out there, then certainly they can do it for this. But yeah, you've got to go into these movies knowing it is absolutely gonzo insane. And that it's more of a Japanese monster movie than it is a straight up adaptation. If you can go into it with your eyes wide open and enjoy it for what it is, that's going to be the key. Don't go in expecting it to be this end all be all adaptation. Quite frankly, I have yet to see an anime adaptation, live action adaptation that actually manages to capture. And that's where Ghost in the Shell might actually pull it off.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's why I'm so interested in that production and kind of excited by it. That even with the casting quibbles and stuff, there's so much behind it right now that could work. And I mean, you could kind of see movies on the Western end that are homages to anime. I mean, there are some pretty obvious ones out there, but I don't know that we've actually had a live action anime adaptation that's worked as well as the original anime did. I'm trying to think, and I can't think of any.
Yeah.
Certainly, this is not the one, Attack on Titan. Just go in knowing that this is going to be one of those so bad it's good situations.
Gotcha.
This is the fandom, in a certain respect, making fun of itself with these two films. Just go in knowing that and enjoy it for what it is. And quite frankly, there, if you just kind of break it down to the writing, the story, if you kind of follow it through, there's some interesting ideas in there. Whether or not they align with what the manga and the anime is eventually going to do, I don't know. But I was intrigued by the fact that, hey, that's a really interesting way to go with that. They then, of course, do all these crazy things around it. But yeah, there is some stuff in there that if you're a fan, you're going to get something out of it if you go in with your expectations properly managed. So,
no,
yes, that was the film we got to see.
Yeah, no, well, certainly that sounds like, yeah, for might be a specialized audience, but for those of us who are familiar with it, enough with the source material, that does sound like a lot of fun.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. I'll say this: it was a lot more fun than trying to watch Attack on Titan Junior High.
Okay, I'll consider myself warned.
It's a thing.
I've heard that. Yes,
there's a handful of episodes already out. Okay. Yeah, so that was the big one. And otherwise, I mean, geez, this fall season has just been so packed. I really haven't had a chance to do much of anything else. But I am looking forward to finally digging in past the, opening title card for Assassin's Creed Syndicate.
Ah, yes.
Yes, it would be nice. But with a couple other projects wrapping up, I think that I'll probably have finally have a bit of time to do that once things settle in. But yeah.
Yeah, and actually, you did just sort of remind me in terms of the new season ramping up. I will just let people know that some of these shows towards the bottom of the rankings that I haven't been keeping up with, or others haven't been keeping up with. I know that for me personally, in terms of the other stuff that has been premiering, recently the big two which started chewing away from other stuff on those nights. One was Fargo returning, and its second season has been really hitting it out of the park so far, and that is of course on Monday nights, and also the Nick has returned on Cinemax, is still just as off-putting as it was in its first season. That whole one wonderful combination of Soderbergh's lighting and direction, sort of strange modernistic, not quite it's not really atonal, but it is sort of multiply rhythmic, let me put it that way, in terms of the way it sort of sets the tone and gives you either running heartbeats or slower pulses going on behind, but all of those sort of more modernistic touches that Soderbergh threw into the look and the sound of the show to represent the fact that yes, that for their time they were the ones on the modernist cutting edge, so giving it, you know, continuing to give it a aesthetic approach that reflects that, and the continuing adventures of Clive Owen trying to be a major surgeon and drug addict at the same time are just as complicated and fascinating as they were in the first season.
That's good to hear, because I know a lot of people were kind of waiting to see how that was going to pan out, because there were a lot of, speaking of things with high expectations, that was one of them.
Yes.
Yes, indeed.
But so far meeting mine anyway.
Very good. Very good. Well, yes, believe it or not, next week we have shows premiering. Yes, I just said that. We have even more shows adding to our list without other shows dropping off quite yet. But let's see if I can pull that up and remember exactly what they are. If Google will actually be nice about it. There we go. Yeah, we have Grimm coming back. We have, as we mentioned earlier this week, Ash versus the Evil Dead starting up. And we have the return of the Librarians as well. Oh, and Legends. Four.
Yes.
Four shows that are premiering. Oh, boy. I'm just not going to bother sleeping.
Yeah, I'm starting to think that the new universal symbol for the for a TV critic may just have to be the hamster wheel.
Well, that is something that's worth at least noting a little bit, is that this is probably the first time that, for various reasons, it's just really impossible for us all to keep up with all these shows. We're really either having to kind of divide and conquer as we go, or shows are starting to drop off. And I think there are certain shows that are fighting for their existence in our on our radar right now. Shows like Gotham,
yes.
Blindspot, definitely. Yeah, I could easily see them just disappearing off of our list just because, excuse me, there's so much there. And you can only keep up with so much. And yeah, some of these shows are not going away just yet. We still have a ways to go with them, so... Sometimes you've just got to separate the wheat from the chaff. But any last thoughts for this week, Edmund?
No, but I like your metaphor there. And of course, we are heading into harvest time. So time to decide who gets taken back to the silo and who gets spread out on the field as grist for next year.
Mm-hmm. That's about as good a metaphor as we can end on. So until next time.
And so ends another epic episode of The Critical Myth. If you want to leave a comment for this show, head over to vognetwork.com. Not only can you find links to the podcast version of each show, but there is a dedicated forum, a ton of written reviews, and related articles by the crew throughout the site. For the written reviews, you can even leave your own review, so let us know if you agree or not. You can also leave comments on our Facebook page, Critical Myth, on Twitter @CriticalMyth, or Google+, under The Critical Myth Show. Any and all use of copyrighted material is only intended for discussion, commentary, parody, or educational purposes, in accordance with U.S. Code Title 17, also known as fair use. In other words, please don't sue us. And of course, the statements and opinions of the Critical Myth crew are not necessarily those of the VOG network, its partners, or affiliates. But let's face it, we're probably right anyway. Until next time, watch, read, and listen, and believe in the critical myth.